You're listening to the B-Fox and B-Frank show, and I am once again mad on Al Gore's internet. The college football playoff is out, and I have some capital T thoughts on the top four and the committee's process, but let's take a quick look on how we got here. There were five Power Five championships over the weekend, obviously. Really only two of consequence. Texas, Florida State, Michigan all took care of business, all did everything they could to put their best foot forward. There were a couple of play-in or play-out games that would kind of have something to say about the final playoff field. Washington, Oregon on Friday. Washington beat Oregon earlier in the season. Oregon was the heavy, heavy favorite in the rematch because reasons, because vibes, because they looked better in crushing bad teams towards the end of the season. But as we say, there's a reason you play the games. Washington wins. 3-point win thanks to a garbage time touchdown from Oregon. But Kalen DeBoer, Michael Penix, 13-0, going to the playoff. And I mean, the magical run continues.
Great defense. The first half game plan for Washington could not have been any better. They really stifled Oregon out of the gates. Offensively, they were able to take advantage of some of the Ducks' miscues and just really put themselves in a position where Oregon was chasing the entire, basically the entire first half, most of the game overall. I believe, if I remember correctly, they did take a lead at some point in the second half, but it was pretty short-lived in this game. But I just remember sitting on the couch watching the pregame and them talking about Bo Nix, how his season completion percentage was near 80%. You know, a guy that we really expected a ton from, we being the country as a whole, expected a ton from since really he came onto the scene with that first week win against Oregon at, I think it was the Superdome in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But really never lived up to the hype. And now at Oregon, he's starting to do that. I think he was 0-5 or 0-6 on the first two drives. They went 3 and out pretty quickly. And it just was a credit to Washington's defense. They were able to disrupt Oregon offensively a ton. They were able to slow down the run game quite a bit. Bucky Irving, 9 carries for 20 yards. It was really Bo Nix, the only one that had any success of note on the ground for Oregon. And then through the air, he had an interception and wasn't that great. So for as well as the offense and Michael Penix played, the defense for Washington deserves a ton of credit and are a reason why I think they can win the national championship and think they should have been the number one seed in the college football playoff.
Yeah, I am honestly just people kind of penalized Washington over the back half of the season on style points, but at the end of the day, beat Oregon twice, beat a good Arizona team as well that really got swept under the rug because I think that was before a lot of people realized just how good Arizona was. And yeah, like you said, like Washington was in complete control of this game early. The defense that has been much improved over the course of the season, I think that was another area that people would try to pick apart during the early seasons. Like the offense is amazing. What's the defense going to bring? And now like the offense a little more balanced, not quite as video game numbers in the passing game, but Dylan right. Johnson over the back half of the year has come on really strong, went over 150 yards on the ground in this game as well. So this is a team I think you could have been concerned about at certain points that they might be more of a finesse team, couldn't match up against certain teams. They beat Oregon twice, and Oregon is not your typical Oregon, as we've talked about. Dan Lanning has really made this a physically tough football team. So, I mean, they certainly earned it. And it's, again, it's a great story. This longtime Big Ten rivalry. It's a great way to end the Pac-12 here.
Huge for the Big Ten. Absolutely yeah. Massive moment for them.
And then the SEC championship game, Alabama, Georgia. Georgia just needed to hold serve to presumably get the number one seed in the playoff. They did not. Alabama beats Georgia 27-24. and really finishes off the in-season turnarounds by Jalen Milroe. Another solid game. Two touchdowns, zero turnovers for him and the rest of the Crimson Tide. And this is another game. Like Oregon, Georgia seemed to be looking up at Alabama the whole time, just could not make a big enough push. We're able to cut it to three late, but that was it. And I mean, Alabama was left for dead. Credit to Nick Saban. He is still the GOAT. But this is a disappointing way for Georgia's, what was it, 29-game win streak to finally come to an end.
Yeah, it was not great overall. Like they just looked lost on the offensive side of the football. And to Alabama's defensive credit, they held Georgia to 78 rushing yards on the game, really made them one-dimensional, something we talked about last week. If you want to win, you really have to put the ball in Carson Beck's hands. And he has been good to almost great for most of the season, Carson Beck, but this was not one of those days. He didn't really make mistakes, but he also didn't make big plays like they needed. Elsewhere, like you said, Jalen Milroe played a very good game, well-controlled, didn't have to do a ton with his legs, which I think is a huge difference from what we've seen earlier in the year, more confidence in his arm. And he did get a little bit of help on the ground. But again, that defense really played well, and that is going to be quite the playoff matchup that we've got coming up.
Yeah, and then that Georgia total over 100 yards under their average on the ground. So yeah, Alabama's defense absolutely stepped up here. And it's clearly good vibes again about the Alabama program, something that you could not say earlier in the year or for a lot of the year. And that brings us to the crux of this show. The playoff rankings fire everyone. I know these are not actual employed people by the College Football Playoff. They all have their own self-interest, which is part of the problem. But the final four we got is Washington and Texas in the Sugar Bowl, which will be a lot of fun, I think. 2-3. Then the Rose Bowl is Michigan, who slides up because Georgia was left out due to losing in the SEC title game. They will play Alabama, which means a Power 5 undefeated champion, Florida State Seminoles, also a pretty big college football brand themselves. But, you know, we did this whole song and dance for UCF where, like, I am still mad about that. It was bullshit. Yeah. But you can sort of see how the committee got there. Here, I don't think there's any rational keyword there, rational argument to leaving Florida State out. So, be frank, make this make sense to me.
I simply can't. I mean, this is the only way that you can logic into it is Jordan Travis is out, and therefore they didn't want another blowout or potential blowout in a college football playoff game. That said, last year's national championship was a bloodbath, and the team that they let in, air quote, let in, TCU, beat Michigan, who was expected to go to the championship, and then got destroyed in that game. It's a disgrace. This is one of the few times I've actually agreed with Booger McFarland. He was going off on the broadcast about how it is just overall disgusting act against college football. There is no logical way to make this make sense. Like you said, everything the committee does or has done throughout the season or in the past has been contradicted by what they did in this scenario. And the worst part of it is they have just continued to tell us that the games don't actually matter. We had a circumstance earlier in the year where Texas was ranked above Oklahoma. Man, it would have been great if those two teams played. Oh, wait, they did, and Oklahoma won that game. The reason Texas was ranked above them is because they had beaten Alabama, even though in a head-to-head, Oklahoma had beaten them already. Now we are looking at Texas getting in, which I have no problem with, Alabama at 4 over Florida State, but Florida State is ranked above Georgia. The team that Alabama beat in the committee's eyes isn't even as good as Florida State is. Florida State didn't lose a game. What are we doing here? What are thing here. This is, I mean, it's Taylor Twellman all over again.
Yeah.
I feel like I come back to his rant all the time, but, and again, and I guess the bigger point here is that when you lose matters more than who you lose to. If Georgia loses, if Alabama and Georgia somehow are playing this game in week five, Georgia and Alabama are both in the top four right now because reasons. If this game, or since this game is played the last week of the year, they figure out how to work it around so that the team who lost their quarterback and still won multiple games, including a game over Louisville, who the committee ranks as their 15th best team without their starting quarterback and their backup quarterback. At some point, that shouldn't be a detriment and should be a credit to the team. I just don't understand.
When you lose definitely matters, but it should not matter more than not losing at all. Like this is, yeah. What are we doing here? There is no way to logic this. This is, first of all, this is only brought about because FBS is so goddamn stupid that they just forever and ever and ever have refused to do a true playoff like every single other level of football does. Every single level.
Yeah.
Like going to four teams does not a playoff make. There was a possibility at some point that you would have five undefeated Power Five spots or champs for four spots.
Right.
Thankfully, never got to that point. And this could have been logicked out. Like, honestly, I think if Georgia beats Alabama, Florida State is in over Texas. I think this is a situation where it's like, you know, nobody's going to say the quiet part out loud, but we had to get an SEC team in here.
They almost did.
Yeah. Like, gotta get Texas in since they beat Alabama head to head. So that means, sorry, Florida State, you're shit out of luck. And now that we've done that, we have to come up with whatever bullshit to justify that. But like, someone has to beat Florida State on the field. Like you cannot just be like, we think this is what's going to happen. So there it is. Cause again, yeah, like that defeats the entire purpose of playing any games this season, which just sucks all of the things that people like about sports out of sports. Like there is precedent here. Ohio State got shit pumped by Virginia Tech the very first year. They were down to their third string quarterback. So we're saying, oh, because Florida State didn't win by 50 in their conference championship game, they're not worthy of an opportunity. Like these things can happen. You have to play the game on the field because if not, if there were no conference championship games as there used to be, Oregon would have gotten in over Washington because everyone assumed, oh, Oregon's a better team. They're going to be 10-point favorites on a neutral field. Play the game, see what happens. Like you can't just be like, what would Vegas think? That is just antithetical to sports. And Florida State did have two games without Jordan Travis. I don't want to give any leeway to the committee here, but I can see a world in which Jordan Travis gets injured with 1 second left of game 13. We haven't seen this team without him. You're like, well, that changes things. They got an opportunity against two decent at worst teams. They went on the road and beat Florida by more than Missouri just beat Florida at Missouri. Get zero credit for that. They just dominated Louisville physically. And threw for basically the same amount of yards that Michigan did against Penn State, but we don't talk about the other part. It's just, oh, Florida State didn't look good, so this win over a top 15 team does not count. The Florida State defense is playing amazing football right now, and you can have your concerns about quarterback play. There's a very good chance that they would have struggled mightily to move the ball against Michigan or whoever, but you have to at least give them the opportunity. You have to, because you're doing this thing with style points on Florida State. Alabama had a 4th-and-31 miracle just to beat Auburn, who just got blown out to New Mexico State. What the fuck are we talking about here? They beat Arkansas by 3. They struggled against South Florida. Like, you can't tell me that Alabama...
That's the biggest point for me. The struggle against South Florida was... You want to see Alabama without their starting quarterback? Well, they played a game, and they looked worse than Florida State did against a worse team. Actually, a worse team than the two teams that Florida State has had to play. Not to mention, Florida State dominated LSU to open the season. Like, at some point, the games actually have to matter. And at this point, it's very clear that this is just an eye test over everything else, and it doesn't make a difference what you do on the field.
Yeah, they played LSU away from home. They played Florida away from home. It's just picking a playoff based on vibes. It's never been any interest in, having a playoff like every single other sport, let alone football. Like if you run the table, you're in, and like could extend it to Liberty. I'm not going to for this situation, but in a normal year, Liberty would probably be a little miffed, regardless of schedule. Like you win every game, you at least should have an opportunity. Because the thing is now, nothing can happen that will justify this decision. Like,
yeah.
Alabama could win the next two games by 50 points each. Florida State could lose by 60 to Georgia. It will not make this right. Like, that. This is just completely illogical and is a darn shame. And I would be absolutely crushed if I was any of the players on Florida State's team. Jordan Travis is taking this really hard, saying he's upset that he didn't break his leg sooner. Like, why are we putting athletes in that situation? It's like, I am not a Florida State fan at all. I generally don't really care for them, but their fans have every right to be really pissed off. And long term, this could have even more repercussions. They're already looking to leave the ACC, like probably going to keep trying to push that at every opportunity, because it's clear the ACC is thought of as lesser than.
Yeah, big time. And just looking at the final rankings, it's just very funny how now they line everyone up based on losses, except at the top of the rankings. Everyone, you know, you've got your last two one-loss teams, Georgia and Ohio State at 6-7. Then you've got the 5 2-loss teams, Oregon, Missouri, Penn State, Ole Miss, Oklahoma at 8-12. And then you get into the 3 losses and then 4 losses. But we don't do it at the top. So, again, there is no rhyme or reason outside of, one, we need the SEC in here. Two, Florida State is not as good a football team and therefore not as intriguing a television game to watch without Jordan Travis. And no matter how you cut it, it's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. You want to go for ratings, have a fucking football NIT. You get Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon. People watch that, but none of those are top 4 teams this year. Like, you can be disappointed, but you know, it's a situation. All of you have losses. You can't say to Florida State, you should have won more. They won every single game they played. Like, it's maddening. And there's going to be no accountability for the playoff committee either. Yeah. Like, cause this is the last year this could possibly happen, because no undefeated Power 5 champ is getting left out of a 12 team playoff, but this is the last time they didn't have to worry about setting a precedent by doing this, for it to possibly bite them in the ass in the future. So just, you know, fuck it, let's do vibes. And that's how we ended up here. But college football is changing for the worse. Every time you sort of push in the right direction, we're finally getting a 12 team playoff again. This would have been a spectacular year to have it.
Yeah.
But you know, one final FU to Florida State on the way out. And I don't know. I mean, I see this. I'm a doomsday sort of person in general, but I can see this having far-reaching consequences again with realignment and all the money that's going around in college football now. It's not, and I mean, there's already legislation trying to be lobbied. Like, Florida State's not going to take this line down, which
nor the SEC.
Will be a funny thing to see how that plays out. But yeah, it's upsetting times.
This is obviously hyperbolic, but at the same time, like, has there been a worse time to be a college football fan? Like, in modern history, the BCS sucked at many points. But now we have a playoff system that is supposed to make it right, and we're still getting undefeated teams in power conferences that can't even get an opportunity to win it. Like, we're going back to the shared title, basically, because if Florida State wins, they absolutely can and should claim a national championship.
Yeah,
because there's no one has beaten them. They have played a power schedule. And like every decision that's being made, as you mentioned, the realignment, we're losing rivalries left and right. We're saying fuck it to geography and all the other athletes and students that exist at these universities. And TV deals are becoming ridiculous where you need streaming services in order to watch fucking Purdue play God knows who in a non, like Ball State in a non-conference game or something. It's just getting out of hand.
Yeah, it's getting too bloated. And yeah, even in the BCS, like you had a situation where undefeated Auburn gets left out, but at least they lost out to two undefeated teams ahead of them. Like right. This was a one loss team that started behind an undefeated team, jumped them without the undefeated team losing. So that's just there is no way to explain it.
Mm-hmm.
The one hat tip I'll give to the committee, they tried their darndest to justify it, but you cannot. And I'm happy to see at least Booger and a couple other talking heads on ESPN rail against this, because, you know, as much as ESPN wants to be the Tim Robinson meme of the guy in the hot dog suit, like we're all trying to find the guy who did this. You had a very big part in this. And Kirk Herbstreit carrying water, being like, they got it right. Like, absolutely not. There's no way. Like, even if you're going off vibes, then you did not get it right, because there are still people out there who think Washington is not one of the four best teams. So, you know, that just does not make sense. Like, the insult to injury part was putting Florida State fifth. It's like, if you think that they're worse than Alabama, you think that they're worse than Georgia too. You are exclusively doing this for TV, just for the final reveal.
They don't like logic. It's very clear. Yeah. So now, I don't know, 12 teams makes it better. But if this year was next year, I see a very real scenario in which Oklahoma and LSU would be flipped, where LSU gets the 12 spot over Oklahoma, who has two losses and a win over Texas, who is in the top four.
Yeah, because then you'll make the argument Oklahoma has worse losses.
Yes.
And but at least Oklahoma will be in the SEC at that point, so maybe we won't.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
that's
if true. If it were this year, certainly.
Yeah.
That would be something, and, you know, and be like, thank God we're going to be in the SEC next year. The final thing I will say, last tinfoil hat, is like, we're kind of reaching a bubble with sports media rights, and it has absolutely ravaged ESPN. You know, they've had to overpay for every sport, particularly college football. It has just dragged so much talent out of there to make up for it. Like, all of the journalists have just been let go, and it's all just debate shows of people screaming at each other, mostly unwatchable. And now they're kind of put in a position that they have a lot of influence in this. They got to be like, we have to get the best possible ratings to justify this investment. So no Jordan Travis, we got to put Alabama in there. That's how it looks to a neutral observer and myself. But again, no way to see this coming.
It's great that ESPN also has some of their folks with AP votes in the AP poll. So start the season, let's just overrate a couple teams that we know we want to see play in week one.
It's fine, though. It's fine.
No conflict of interest.
I'm putting my future on Washington. So that's where my rooting interest will be. But yeah, that was a real downer on what has been, like, for all the off-field stuff, like a very fun season of college football.
Yeah.
All right. Changing gears, exhale, and college basketball. I'll throw it over to you, but I will say to start, seeing some parity, a lot of upsets, was a very fun week. Who do you have as a winner for last week?
I'm giving our guy Brad Brunell the the head nod here.
It's time.
Clemson, they are 7-0, and he may outlast Dabo Swinney at this university. Big win at Alabama by 8. PJ Hall is balling right now. That kid is very good. He was someone that we both called out last year as a player to watch. He had a solid year, but this year has really taken it to the next level. And then a win over Pitt on the road as well, 79-70. They've got a really solid South Carolina team coming up this week, I think Wednesday, before they take on TCU and Memphis. Those are three really big games, 2-1, 3-0, and they should be in the top 15 because they are playing like one of the best teams in the country right now. As I mentioned, Hall has been playing very well. 21 points, 7 rebounds, almost 3 assists, and 2 blocks a game with over 50% from the field and 42% from 3. He has been an absolute monster for this team. And a guy by the name of Joe Girard, you may remember him from another team that wore orange, is shooting 46% from 3 this year. So they've got a really nice inside-out combo working there.
Yeah, that Girard pickup was very underrated, went very under the radar in the offseason. And yeah, it's start to have some questions about Clemson. Brad Brunell delivers. And I had South Carolina on there as well, because both these teams are 7-0. Very disappointing season for Lamont Paris last year with G.G. Jackson. G.G. Jackson is gone. The team is very... very fun. They don't really have the wins that Clemson has, but they did just hit 18 threes in a blowout over George Washington. So they are playing a very fun brand of basketball. This will be their first real test. Battle for supremacy in the Palmetto State, I believe. And yeah, it's this would go a long way towards starting to build a tournament resume. They haven't really done that yet. They haven't lost, so that's at least a positive. If they were to go undefeated this year, they would be in the tournament because basketball is not psycho. But
yes,
this is an early season game that there's obviously some juice from the schools. Not overly fond of each other, but I think nationally it has a little bit more cachet than it usually does because both teams are really playing good basketball.
Yeah, Michi Johnson, Ohio State transfer, almost 18 points a game. He's playing real well. And then BJ Mack, a name folks might remember from those solid Wofford teams. He is over there now at South Carolina, 16 points, 5 rebounds a game. So some interesting scorers, really good guard right now for Lamont Paris's group, and they have been a nice surprise to start this season.
Give a shout-out to North Carolina. They've bounced back nicely, 3 straight wins over Arkansas, Tennessee, Florida State. Not the usual Florida State level, but they have a couple good wins, including over Colorado. Just for one half, an absolute clinic against Tennessee offensively.
Yeah.
Came back to earth a little bit, but no one makes a Rick Barnes defense look that bad as they did in the first half. Like Dalton Connect was playing so well offensively, trying to keep up, but it still wasn't enough. And, for as well as Armando Bacot is and has played, RJ Davis is really on a hot streak. In the last couple of games, 27 and 26 points against FSU and Tennessee, respectively. Kind of more on him this year, no Caleb Love, which means there are more shots to go around, but he's also making them. So that is kind of important in what a lot of people were hoping for as Caleb Love sort of wore out his welcome and thankfully has landed on his feet, playing pretty well in Arizona. But for North Carolina's perspective, getting RJ Davis going and kind of being that lead scoring guard has worked out pretty nicely.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of RJ Davis. I thought he should have been the guy that took the shots as often as we saw Caleb Love do it. I think you could see there was a ton of friction there towards the end of the year, especially last season, with both of them just not being on the same wavelength most of the game. I think Cadeau is the big difference, though. He is such a facilitator and a playmaker offensively for them. He doesn't really need to seek out his shot like Caleb Love does. I think he took 5 shots against Tennessee, and they just need him to keep the offense moving. This is a fast-paced, run-and-gun style of play, as we all have become, as has been well documented in the histories of North Carolina basketball. And Cadeau fits that mold of a lead guard that just pushes the tempo and pushes the ball really well. And Davis is feeding off of that. He's getting a lot of open looks and a lot of good looks. The other piece is Harrison Ingram's played really well, and especially on the defensive end. He's ticked up over 1.5 steals a game, which is more than double his career average at this point. He's playing so aggressively on that side of the ball, and I think there's just a lot of confidence for this team right now. They are and have always been a team that thrives on confidence. You can see when they're low on it. You can see when they're high on it, and this latest streak was certainly a stretch of high confidence play for North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, Stanford could really use a guy like that.
Yeah,
Cadeau has really come into his own. It's a slower start to the season than I was anticipating. Kind of forget sometimes these guys are freshmen. They won't always immediately hit the ground at a full sprint, but
right.
Yeah, he's been taking care of the ball. He's been spreading it around. And that was, again, not trying to pick on Caleb Love. He's very fun, but the ball did stick more on the teams the last 2 years than it is this year. So that's a noticeable change. Who else did you have as a winner?
Fan favorite, the Virginia Cavaliers. I'm going to throw the Hoos up there. Nice win against Texas A&M in a real grinded out kind of game. Both teams really defensive minded, slower tempo. Then a double digit high scoring win over Syracuse. I think, and the real reason here is the ability to win in both styles. I think for so long we have talked about how ugly Virginia basketball is. Or as Rothstein says, a thing of beauty. It is certainly not.
That triggers me every time.
Yes. The ability to put the ball in the rim or in the hoop right now for Virginia is coming at a much greater rate than we have seen lately, especially in this game against Syracuse. They shot over 50% from the floor, over 50% from three. They're always going to be good from the free throw line. They're just showing that they can win in a number of different ways. When teams want to push the tempo, they can compete in that style. They can also control the tempo of a game like they did against Texas A&M. And I think that's going to pay dividends come later in the year when they get into ACC play and they play the likes of North Carolina or they play a Clemson who has been shooting the ball unbelievably well. Miami likes to run and gun. They're a very good team as well. That this is where Virginia is going to thrive. Are they good enough to beat those teams? I think that remains the question, but I think stylistically, at least right now, we're seeing that they can handle the change in pace, which is light years ahead of Virginia teams in the past.
Yeah, we're kind of at a point now, too. Like, maybe Wisconsin's good. Maybe I read into too much what I wanted to see from that early season blowout loss for Virginia. Mm-hmm. Virginia is going to be who they are. This was a good boosting week. I do think Syracuse is low key stinky. And
I agree.
Might be in a world of trouble. It's a real Sophie's choice between rooting for Virginia or A&M to lose. So somebody had to in that game. And I'm not entirely surprised that it was A&M because Virginia does have a tendency to kind of do that to the new kids on the block, whoever they may be. You think you're feeling yourself a little bit, up and coming team or program, and then Tony Bennett will just suffocate you. And it just, many a coach has gone through the 5 stages of grief on the sideline over there. This is what we're going to see this year. It's fine. The scoring problems, I do think, are going to persist on the perimeter. But they are going to win a lot of these games.
Yeah. Last one, Georgia Tech. You can't really have a better week than Georgia Tech did. They beat what I think is a very good Mississippi State team, although their week will not tell you that. They win in a kind of grinded out style and then beat Duke, which is another team that had a tough week, but they took advantage. That's two top 25 wins following their loss to UMass Lowell. So that should cancel out if a resume becomes anything of note for this Georgia Tech team, which I'm not really sure it will. But at this point, they're 1-0 in ACC play and have a couple of marquee wins already on the resume.
Yeah, I mean, this is a crazy season so far for Tech, because they, as you said, they lost to UMass Lowell, they lost by 35 to Cincinnati, and now back-to-back wins over ranked team. So still not really sure what to make of the Jackets. There is a sort of litmus test game this week against Georgia, another team that's sort of struggling to find an identity, for better or worse. Obviously, Tyrese Proctor going down, not great for Duke, but Georgia Tech able to kind of take away what Duke does well, force the Blue Devils to shoot a lot of threes, which they did not hit, and you're able to get out of there with not the best court storm I've ever seen, but, you know, it's early in the Stoudemire era. We're working on it, but yeah, this was I think a chance for the season to get away a little bit, and then this week kind of righted the ship and should have the guys playing with a little bit more confidence.
I think the only negative of this is that both of these wins over Duke and Mississippi State right now are not quad one wins. The net rankings are out. Georgia Tech's like 142. Neither Duke nor Mississippi State is in the top 30. So will that change over the season? I'd have to imagine Duke will rise up the rankings. If I had to bet right now, I think Mississippi State will as well. I think they'll be very competitive in the SEC this year. But at the moment, optically, it's a little disappointing if you're Georgia Tech.
Yeah, but you'll take what you can get. And I mean, this is I'm not overly fond of the net rankings in general. The first one, there was no one truly egregious in the first list in terms of like top 10. Like you could say Princeton, but they are undefeated. It's not like, I think like LMU was top 10 the very first one. It's like, is this just RPI again?
Right.
That'll even itself out over the course of the season. I mean, the good thing is Cincinnati's top 15, so that should make Georgia Tech feel a little bit better. But yeah,
will that last?
It's hard to read too far into the net ranking so far, unless you are like Princeton or Cincinnati, then that's going on your team Twitter account for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we've got Nevada, Indiana State, and McNeese all in the top 30, so little data points needed there.
And Sycamores are solid.
They are.
I have no more winners. I did have Duke as one of my losers. Just to close the loop on that, just how similar the two were, Arkansas and Georgia Tech, and it doesn't seem like Tyrese Proctor is going to be sidelined for very long. But if he is, then that obviously becomes a major red flag, because one of the things we were kind of talking about in the offseason was all of the depth Duke is going to have. And we've seen some good games from the freshmen. We haven't really seen any sort of consistency. It's been a lot of, taking turns and trying to show some support around Filipowski. Teams are just packing it in right now. And Duke has not really shown the physicality necessary to overcome that either. Like, obviously, the shooting has not been there. They were 10 for 38 this week, I think, against Arkansas and Georgia Tech from three. Just being dared to shoot, and you're still shooting almost 20 times a game, kind of seems like you're playing right into what other teams are asking you to do. So I would advise figuring out how to shoot, but alternatively, and probably a better thing, would be have a backup plan of how to win games that is not so reliant on that, because, you know, all respect to Georgia Tech, probably not the best team you're going to play the rest of the season. I understand Bud Walton is a difficult place to play, but you can't turn that into multiple losses with what happened against Georgia Tech. So that this team is looking a lot more vulnerable a lot earlier than expected.
Yeah, I don't know. I think even trying to spin the Arkansas loss right now is a little tough. The Hogs have looked rough to start this year. They have losses to North Carolina, who Duke expects to compete with and beat both times this season by 15. They lost to Memphis, who's played well, obviously, but is certainly not at the level of a Duke. And then they lost to UNC Greensboro already. So I like this Arkansas team. I think we've talked about it a couple weeks ago that I have a future on them to win the SEC. That is just aged like milk. But this team is fun. They run up and down. They're able to score a ton, and there's so much talent on the roster overall, which is why that is pretty fair to say that this Duke loss, true road games are tough, I think is just the way to put it. Like, true road games in college basketball are tough. That's why you don't see many teams playing them early on in the season. But I almost think that's to a detriment. And right now, to your point about Duke shooting, they really only have two or three guys shooting decently well from three. The team as a whole is shooting 33%. Filipowski is down in like 25% from beyond the arc. They need to keep attacking the rim. I think what they did so well early in the season was get to the free throw line, attack the rim, and we're not necessarily seeing that as much right now. And that's hurting them. Or at least when they are in this Arkansas game, they only shot 67%, which is unacceptable.
Yeah, and also seeing too many lineups of Filipowski and Ryan Young together in general. Like, Filipowski should be under the basket. Yeah, that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah.
Who do you have as a loser?
Villanova versus the Big Five.
Philly, yeah.
Yeah, Villanova cannot beat a team in Philadelphia. I almost said in the state of Philadelphia, in the city of Philadelphia. They lose yet again, and I don't understand this team. I'm just going to say that simply. They are very good against everyone outside of the city. They lose by 13 to St. Joe's, who's been okay this year, and then they lose by 2 to Drexel in a very low-scoring, ugly game. Excuse me. It's Eric Dixon, and it's nothing. Jordan Longino was in double figures. He had 13 against Drexel. Everyone else really struggled to score. They had 34 of the team's 55 points. Burton needs to provide more. Mark Armstrong needs to do a hell of a lot more. He has been pretty bad to start this year. TJ Bamba is way too hit and miss. And Justin Moore, for a guy that has been in college, seen it, done it, cannot be playing the way he is right now. He is more of a liability on offense than is normal. And he's just really struggling overall the last couple of games to kind of find his shot. He is shooting below career averages across the board outside of the free throw line and just cannot seem to find it. I don't know what to think of this Villanova team. They seem unbeatable and very beatable at the same time. Like, they looked awesome against Texas Tech. They looked great in the UNC win. They looked very good against Memphis, but they've looked horrible against Philadelphia teams that they should be handling.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't been great in America, I think is what it boils down to. They were, I thought, all the way back in the Bahamas, but it is it is just an insanely funny bit to be great against everyone and then finish sixth out of the Big Five, which is just crazy that that is a possibility, but they're not going to rename it just on account of Drexel. Sorry. But yeah, like, St. Joe's game, St. Joe's just took it to him. Like, that was not a particularly close game. Not that 13 points necessarily looks that close or whatever the final margin was, but St. Joe's was in complete control for that whole game. And yeah, I mean, the one thing Drexel can do is defend, and they did take Villanova out of any sort of rhythm. So the only positive I can say is you're not going to see these teams again. It is not what you want to do when you are trying to build a resume, because these are losses, especially Drexel and Penn. I still have some hope for St. Joe's that are not going to look great at the end of the season. Potential SEC concerns. You know, we've got Kentucky probably should have lost to St. Joe's. They did end up losing to UNC Wilmington, and then Auburn went and lost to App State, shooting about 11% from three.
No idea why they took that game in the first place.
Yeah, that was wild. I don't know if there is. I saw that and I didn't know. Like, obviously, it's not like a VCU former coach situation, but yeah, was curious. And they paid the price. Aiden Holloway came up looking really strong against Baylor. And I think ever since then, he's been struggling to find that level again, which is a little wild because you would think it would be the opposite. Trying to being great against, you know, the not as great teams on your schedule, but you know, the legend Curtis Jones did that against Kansas game one and then just disappeared from Indiana games for three more years. But Aiden Holloway is a five-star. There's a little more juice coming in. They're going to need him to play at a higher level to support Broome and Williams and some of the guys on the inside. But yeah, the SEC has some troubling losses stacking up. Like, you talked about Arkansas already. The Duke game was their last stand. Like, still a bad loss for Duke, but that was Arkansas's season. And Tennessee is stringing together loss after loss. Admittedly, a very challenging November slate, both with the travel and the opponents. So they, you know, they do have a win over Wisconsin that'll carry a little more juice now, but it's a bit of a slower start for the league overall than possibly could have been anticipated. Mississippi State, as you said, not only lost to Georgia Tech, also lost to Southern. So for a team that we thought was probably turning the corner, especially on offense, appears to have not done that. And then, yeah, I mean, it's been a rough couple weeks for Alabama, who has Purdue and Creighton coming up. So yeah, it's it was a deep league that we thought at the start of the year still could be that, but maybe not the same top level teams that we thought early, but some warning signs.
Yeah, they really need to turn it around and quick, because we are running out of games now. The conference play starts before Christmas, which is bananas, but they are running out of opportunities. And in order to kind of feast on your own league, you need some teams with some quality wins, and there really aren't many out there.
Yeah, it's zero currently in the top 15 for the SEC, if I'm not missing anyone. Yeah. Sorry, you don't get Texas till next year. But
nope.
Yeah, so that's something to monitor, because it was the Big 12 SEC battle was fun, but not a lot of needle movers for the SEC.
Yeah. I think along the same vein as the Pac-12 is 1-15 in quad one games right now. And
yeah.
Like, Arizona is great. They are the number one team in the country. They are very good. This is a team that I've been a big fan of this season. Utah has dropped games. USC has dropped games. UCLA has not been playing that great. Oregon does not look that great. Colorado was a team that a lot of people expected a big jump from, and they do not seem up to it just yet. Washington has struggled. Like, we've talked about Stanford already. This is a league that had the opportunity to be, I would say, top heavy in a good way. And then have some middle tier teams that can compete and can give the big guys some trouble. But right now it looks like that trouble may not be worth it at this point, because all you can do is kind of hurt your league's position, given their overall struggles in non-conference play.
Yeah. I'm most surprised, I would say, by Colorado, although the Colorado State loss isn't terrible, but I think they just seem destined as a program to just, when they are having a decent season, to just be in like the 8-9 range. I think that's what they're on track for. And to your point, not going to be a lot of great wins available in conference play. So we'll have to beat Arizona once or twice to really move that needle. UCLA seems to just be in full on rebuild at this point. And yeah, Utah's had opportunities, but hasn't always been able to close. So yeah, the for as good as Pac-12 football was this year, you look at the basketball season, you're like, I get it. I get why this is breaking up.
Yeah. Last one on the loser side that I had was just the officiating. It's back. The Georgetown TCU finish clearly out of bounds on the game-winning 3 feet, maybe, from the official. We don't get the call right on the floor and then can't overturn it at the monitor.
That's the knife twist.
Yes. Let's just figure this out. Like, there should be something in some sort of rule in place to overrule just a very clearly wrong, egregious missed call. Let's fix that right now. I don't care. Like, Georgetown is in the Big East, and therefore I should want them to win as many games as possible. I frankly don't care whether or not they win or lose. I only really care if they lose 2 games a year, and that's when they play Seton Hall, obviously. But that's as bad as it gets, seeing just a clearly blown call that can't even get fixed.
Yeah. That's just, you're at the monitor. I don't know if the motivation for that is they want to save time and not like over review things or what, but
well, they're well past that.
Yeah, I know, but like, they don't want to make it worse, but it's like, you're there, you're staring at the clock to review that. And also like, this is a clearly missed call, but
yeah,
nothing I can do about that.
Let's just quietly push that to the side.
Yeah.
Pretend like we don't notice it.
And it's, I mean, I wrote down Maryland sucks. We've established that. I'm not going to take a victory lap on Purdue because, again, nothing before March matters. But I will say it was interesting that they followed the exact same script from all their losses last year. and Braden Smith, the lights were too bright. And it is literally as Lance Jones goes, they will go. Because when he played well in Maui, they looked great. He had some of the loudest bricks in Evanston these years have ever heard. And they were not great. They got bullied by Budarius. So that the undefeated season is no more. But yeah, that's, the Big Ten is not looking great overall outside of that, but thankfully can't say there are no Big Ten teams in the top 15. So God, at least we got that going on.
That's always a positive. you know, the lights of Welsh Ryan Arena are not for everyone. I think that's just abundantly clear. And you know, there's no real shame in admitting that you are that person.
All right, that will do it for us this week. Hopefully next week the vibes will be better. I assume they will be. Knock on wood, could happen that would ruin my mood to that extent as yesterday did. But, you know, we'll see. And you can see with us if you tune in next week. So we will see you then.